welcome to a brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and front man. And as all of you could hear, we have an episode. We have something to record and tell you guys about. Even though this week is going to be an Eastern Panhandle Paracon panel. How about that as a tongue twister? And I've been saying it for the past few months as well. And the reason why I'm happy about this right now is because if you've been following us on social media over the past week or so, you know what's going on. If you're not, I do recommend following us on social media. Links will be in the description. I'll let you know after the show. But what's been going on is that for the past couple of weeks, the laptop I've been using for the show for the past 3 years, the keyboard kind of went out on it, and I've been using a backup keyboard for the show, which has been working great for the most part. But due to a Windows update last week, there's something going on totally messed up with the operating system. I can't type in my password. When I can type in my password, it's only for a few seconds. And I'm only able to quickly copy stuff to a jump drive to back up what I can in regards to the show and personal files. But when but that was even for a few seconds in upon itself, because what was going on is that a lot of you might realize that with some Windows programs, there are hotspots or quick keyboard keys you could just press, and that particular menu would come down and it'll give more keyboard shortcuts. That's what was going on, and I looked all around to shut that off, and I couldn't shut it off. So if you have any ideas how to shut that off, please email the show at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. But I did do a system restore on the machine, and the problem did not go away. So the computer I'm using right now, the laptop I'm using right now, is on loan from our co-host, Big Candy. He was gracious. He had an extra laptop that was in essence a few years old and works great. It's a little bit different because it's running Windows 7, but I have to get used to that all over again. But still, it works. And I might say let me stress the fact that this is on loan. Even though he gave me the computer, it's on loan. As soon as I'm able to get a brand new laptop to use for the show, I have to give this laptop back to him. Please understand that fact. I have to give this laptop back to him. And that being said, because of my financial situation, there is a GoFundMe campaign out, and the website is GoFundMe.com. Help the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. Every donation helps, even if it's $5. It all adds up. Please, if you can, the link is in the show description. You could copy and paste that link and share it on Facebook, Twitter, where have you. Please help the show raise funds to get a brand new computer and everything beyond the laptop will go to camera equipment and other supplies for the show. I'm not cheating you. I'm not everything else. With everything that's been going on, everything will be straightforward when I get the new equipment and the new laptop. There will be unboxings of all the equipment for you. So, to see what I received. Now, here's the thing. Next up, the next announcement I have to tell you. That there's more than likely I will be there. I will find a way to get there. This Saturday, October the 20th, 2018, I will be at the Four State Comic Con. Set up and everything else. I'll be doing my hustle to promote the show. If you're in that area, come on down, or anywhere near driving distance to Hagerstown, Maryland, please stop by the Hager Hall Convention and Event Center and stop by, pay the admission, support your local convention. That's what this is. It's a little pop culture show. Come down and say hi to me. I'll be in the back right corner. And not to mention, I will be doing at 12 noon this Saturday, October 20th, I will be doing a panel with those from Those Not So Super Dudes and Victims and Villains. We'll be doing a podcast 101 panel, which is basically a podcast for how to do a podcast for beginners. So there's that. I just want to let you guys and gals know to come on down and enjoy the event. It's always a great event. Lots to look at. Plenty of other panels about how to cosplay. There's going to be on Sunday, there's going to be a YouTube type panel. More than likely we'll be there that Sunday as well. So we'll try to get other panels as well. We will be there full tilt to the nine to record everything, interviews, the whole nine for you guys. What we come out with that from that event will be wonderful. What exactly we'll get, I don't know. Good chance it's going to be the panels, at least one panel, an interview, and a lot of the standard stuff. So stay tuned to everything for it. So let me get into the disclaimers now, because this is a panel episode. I know I'm wasting time for it. Nothing was cut out. The panel is called Terror in the Woods, and it's the presenter is, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, or at least his last name correctly, is Dave Spinks. He gave a wonderful presentation, and the disclaimers are, this is his content, his panel, and he is presenting his opinions, not ours. It's meaning that this is strictly his content, even though we are sharing his content with all of you out there. We do not lay claim to any of his content in this panel. We are just sharing it to all of you, and so he has a wider reach in regards to his content in this panel. That's number one. Number two, nothing was taken out in regards to this. There was one section that was boosted a little bit. He did a fine job with it. He was he used all the mics, and a little bit of a gripe. I'll go into a little bit of rant at the end. So let me give you the panel right now.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for coming, guys. Give you a little background on myself. I'm ex-military for 9 years, retired federal law enforcement officer, and my journey into the paranormal began in 1983 as a young man on a fishing trip with my grandfather. I don't know if you've seen the show that I tell my story on, but of course, Hollywood changes things. Okay, so you got to remember that when you're watching some of these shows, they're not all real. Okay, they do change things to make them a little more scarier, or you know, more entertaining, if you will. I think it's pertinent to be honest about that when you see these TV shows, because they're going to do what they want to do, you know. So, and I'll give you the long and short of what happened to me that day. Being a young man, I relished in the time with my grandfather on our fishing trips, okay? We used to go, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Gauley River. It's in central West Virginia in Nicholas County. Great fishing river. We had our favorite spot that we went to almost every summer. So, you know, I'm 13 years old. We pack our gear, and I'm ecstatic, headed to our favorite fishing hole for the weekend. We get there, and I'm chomping at the bit to get my line in the water. You know, if you guys are fishermen or hunters, you know the feeling. So we get there, and I'm begging Grandpa, you know, let me get my line in the water, Grandpa. And he's like, well, we got to get our gear ready and all this. And he said, he finally gives in, and I, you know, within minutes I catch a really nice rainbow, and I'm stoked. You know, not only did I catch the first fish of the day, I caught the biggest fish of the day, and I had bragging rights. So, long story short, we both caught our limit. We set up camp, and we ate like champs that night. You know, Grandma sent cornbread with us the whole nine yards. So we're sitting there relaxing. It's getting just before dark. Just enjoying the day, talking about all the fish we caught. And then out of nowhere, a huge splash rains down in the middle of the river. So big, in fact, I know you all have heard a splash that's so big that the water rains down, you know. So we both jump out of the chairs. We're looking around trying to figure out what the heck just made that noise. We see nothing in the river. No tree branches that fell. Saw nothing. So after a few minutes, we kind of calmed down and chalked it up as maybe a rock rolled off the other side. Now, let me explain to you what the other side of the river was. It was basically vertical, straight up the side of the mountain, a side where nothing, no people would normally go because it's just too rough, you know, to climb down that steep of a bank to fish. So we're sitting there after a few minutes, we relax. And then I hear the sound of something crashing through the tree branches, and I look to my left, and the river's 75 yards across where we were at this particular point, and I see a boulder bigger than a man could get your arms around coming through these tree branches. See it coming in an upward angle, comes down probably 30, 40 yards in the middle of the river. Now, remember, I said it was 75 yards across. What in the heck could have caused that? The boulder hits the water, ka-woom, giant splash again. By that time, we're both jumped up going, what the heck was that? And I look for my grandpa, and he's gone. I look behind me, he's running for the tent. I know then he's going to get the gun. So I'm standing there as a 13-year-old kid, crapping my pants, basically, going, what the heck? And he's running back. To see my grandpa scared, that scared me even more, because you're talking about a man that was in the second wave at Normandy. He was a medic in World War II, wasn't scared of anything. To see the look on his face of being scared frightened me. So he comes back to me with the gun. He's standing there, and he starts yelling across the river, you hoodlums, knock it off or I'm going to shoot. So he, in his mind, he's thinking there's some people over there messing with us. Well, just as he got done saying that, this ungodly howl, noise, yell, whatever you want to call it, comes from the other side of the river. So strong, in fact, that you can feel it in your guts. I mean, I've never heard anything like it to this day, even though I do a lot of Bigfoot research and investigations, but that one, for some reason, I've heard others, but that one just roared through that canyon and that holler, you know, like it was ungodly. So I'm sitting there shuddering, and Grandpa lets off a shot in that direction. That thing hollers again. He lets off two or three more shots at the same time. He's yelling at me, get to the truck, boy. So I run to the truck. And if you can picture it in your mind, the truck's parked like this. Okay, the truck's parked like this. I'm looking across the river, and I'm down in front of the quarter panel peeking around. And Grandpa's about 5-10 yards away from me shooting. Okay? So, He shoots three or four times. I don't even remember. I know he shot several times in that direction. All the while, this thing is hollering and screaming and hitting trees. Trees are waving. 60-foot trees, big, that big around. I'm shaking, you know, scared to death. He comes running at me, grabs me with one arm, throws me in the truck. I mean, my grandpa was a big man, you know. Throws me, I hit the other side of the door. That's how hard he threw me. He said, we're getting out of here, boy, that's not of God. Now, my grandpa also, when he came back from the war, was a Baptist minister for 40 years after the war because it changed him. So we jump in the truck, we peel out of there, and it's one of those old country roads that is just chock full of potholes. We're bottoming out. I got my head in my hands like this. Scared to death, we're gonna, you know, the truck's gonna break down, this thing's gonna kill us. So we finally make it out of there. It's like a 3-mile trek out of this dirt road onto the hardtop. We get out of there, we drive around for a while, and I can tell my grandpa's gathering his thoughts, trying to figure out what the hell we just saw. So he pulls over after like 20 minutes of driving around, and he says, son, we better not tell anybody this because they're gonna think we're crazy. So, you know, he's also a minister, you gotta remember that. And he said, my parishioners will think I'm doing drugs or drinking. So we made a promise right then and there. That was in 1983. I never spoke of this story until 2 years ago. I wrote it in a friend's book series called Wood Knox by David Weatherly. Shortly after that, I was contacted by the producers of that show and told my story on Terror in the Woods. Now, the reason I told the story is because my grandfather died 2 years ago. And another funny side story to that is I didn't know what to do about telling the story, but I knew doing what I do now that I had to tell that story because that's what started me into this whole craziness of the paranormal. So I contacted my uncle and I said, this is what me and grandpa saw, and I'm going to talk about it publicly. And he started laughing at me. And I'm thinking, oh, great, he's going to make fun of me, think I'm crazy, right? He goes, oh, you're talking about that monkey man you and grandpa saw in the woods all those years ago. So I'm like, oh, you're kidding me. He told you about it? He goes, yeah, he came to me like 25 years ago, said, Stanton, I got to get this off my chest because if something happens to me, I want someone else to know what happened to me and David in the woods that day. So that brings me to nowadays. And have any of you seen the show? Anyone seen the show? Well, in the show, they added in some stuff that didn't happen. Like they said, we spent the night there. We never made it to the night. We were gone. They added in the part where I was gathering firewood and something was growling at me and howling at me. That didn't happen. So if you ever watch the show, you know what's real now and what's not. It was really a cool experience. I don't do this to get on TV, but I wanted to share that experience, you know. And I write I'm writing stuff in books of my 30 plus years in the field now. And that's the way I like to get it out, the real story, what really happened. So sometimes, you know, if you get an opportunity, you got to take it. And, you know, over the years, I've met many great people like Anthony and my good friends over here and many others in the field, you know, that all have the same passion. We're all here because why? Most of us have seen something, experienced something, or someone we know, someone close in our family has also experienced something that they can't explain. We're all seeking answers, whether it's in the cryptid field, in the UFO field, in the paranormal, ghosts, and such, so on and so forth fields. So over the years, you know, after I had this experience, I started trying to find out what the hell it was that I saw because I didn't know anything about Bigfoot. I never heard of this thing, you know. So you start talking to people and you start researching. And back in those days, we didn't have the luxury of the internet, right? So I had to rely on local libraries, newspapers, magazines, and I came across Fate magazine and crazy, like some of those tabloid newspaper stories. You know, you don't know what's real and what's not back then, especially as a kid, but you still read it and saying, hey, I wasn't alone. Other people have seen this thing, and it's not just here in the United States, it's worldwide. So, you know, then I became really enamored. I wanted answers. You know, what the hell was that I saw in the woods that day? So, researching on, continuing on, I started coming across many other different stories in the paranormal field, you know, UFOs and ghosts. And then I had another ghost experience with my other grandpa, but that's another story for another time. And I came across the show In Search Of. Anybody seen the show In Search Of? It's an old-timey show with Leonard Nimoy. It's a great show. And then I was hooked, I mean, because all of it fascinated me. And over the years, continuing on research, especially here in West Virginia, my home state, you know, you start coming across, you know, you're looking for Bigfoot answers, but then you come across all these other crazy stories of different creatures in the woods of West Virginia. The Grafton Monster, the White Thing, and the Bigfoot in West Virginia has many names. It's almost by county, you know. The Blue Devil, the Yahoo, Wampus Cat. There's so many different names, and that's really it's localized, you know. So you just come across all these fascinating stories and folklore. You know, is it real? Somebody saw something somewhere, you know. So long and short of it is a half an hour isn't that much time to tell. I could talk to you guys for hours, you know, about this stuff. But I recently, my name has been getting out there. So I was recently in the Flatwoods Monster movie by Small Town Monsters, done by Seth Breedlove. Really good independent filmmaker who's making waves in the field, bringing back all these great part of history stories, folks. I mean, I don't know if anyone, who knows about the Flatwoods Monster? That story back in 1952 made worldwide news. It was huge. I mean, it blew up. And then all of a sudden, whoom, it disappeared. It was washed under the rug. Now, if you don't know, you know, some of you raised your hands. If you don't know what the Flatwoods Monster, it was basically a UFO sighted in the sky that coincided with the sighting of a creature in the woods on the Fisher Farm in 1952. And it's a long story. I don't have time to tell it, but I'll tell you how I became involved in the movie. I was born in Gassaway, West Virginia, Braxton County, just a few miles from where the incident happened. I grew up, my mom's first cousins, my second cousins, hearing that story because they went to school with the boys that witnessed the thing. So I have firsthand knowledge of a lot of this stuff. And being that my name got out there doing investigations on everything in the paranormal realm, I was asked by Seth to do the movie, to talk about another specific incident that happened the day after the initial sighting. So, it was really an honor for me to be able to do that because I was born in that county right down the road from the incident where it happened, and I actually had family members involved with the boys and some of the kids that saw the thing. So, if you've never seen the movie, I highly recommend all of Seth's movies because, you know, they're keeping this. These stories are part of pop culture. And many people involved in these stories saw something, folks. They really experienced something. And it's part of history. And it's important to all of these stories to keep them going, in my opinion. So, you know, with that being said, you can rent the movie on Amazon for, I think it's $1.99. He also did the Mothman and the Minerva Monster and the Boggy Creek, a whole mess of them. There's like eight of them, and he's continually doing more. So I highly recommend check them out. If you want your own copy, I have a few copies of the Flatwoods Monster at my table. I will sign them for you, whatever you want. Now, getting back to Bigfoot. So over the years researching this topic and this thing, I came across many other native West Virginians. Some contacted me, some I heard about word of mouth, and I contacted them because I wanted to hear their stories. So over the years, I compiled a list and a whole bunch of firsthand eyewitness accounts from good folks with, you know, good backgrounds, people such as law enforcement officers, people with something to lose rather than gain by telling their stories. And that's important, okay? That's important when you hear these kind of stories. Because, say you have, just take a law enforcement officer, for example. He's held to a higher standard than the normal community is. His testimony and stuff in the court of law, you know, puts people away, you know, and it's highly, you know, important. So when you got folks like that telling you they saw a large, hairy, hominid, bipedal creature running across the road in front of them, you better take that to heart because they're not making it up. They have something to lose by telling those stories, you know. So over the years, I collected many accounts from a lot of good people. And West Virginians and native in general, you know, they're not going to come out and talk about that thing. And mostly to their local family members, they'll say, man, Joe Bob down the road saw this, man. He scared the crap out of him. They're not going to come out and talk to just anybody most of the time. So, you know, being a native of the state, you know, I kind of have the advantage in that when I hear some of these stories. But so I compiled all these accounts and just finished the West Virginia Bigfoot book by me, and it's going to be out on Amazon any day now. It's finished. I'm just waiting for Amazon to put it up. It's got my story in it and many others, and then a bunch of other stuff. Talks about different theories and Gigantopithecus and a whole bunch of Native American folklore that's associated with Bigfoot just in West Virginia, not anywhere else. All this stuff is primarily West Virginia. So if you want to check out my book on Amazon, or I'm taking pre-orders at my table and I'll sign it and send it to you. So, with that being said, any questions? Sir, go ahead.
So, just an opinion question.
Yeah.
Back in the day, like you said, there was a worldwide event in the Flatwoods.
Yes.
And I've seen footage from back then, like UFO discoveries and things like that. They took it seriously.
Absolutely.
Why don't they take it seriously?
Okay. Good question. If you guys didn't hear, did everybody hear what he asked me? Okay. That goes not only with UFOs and stuff, but that's the paranormal, supernatural fields in general. In my opinion, and solely my opinion on that, is people are scared to death of the unknown, okay? They're going to chalk it up as that guy's crazy, you know, whatever the case may be. But let me tell you something. In 1952, there was a massive UFO wave sighting across the eastern half of the United States. Pilots were on 24-hour alert to chase these things and shoot them down. Now, the government just doesn't issue orders like that. I was in the Air Force for 9 years. I walked around and guarded every top-secret military aircraft that you can imagine and some that you don't know about, okay? That was my job, primarily, for quite a while. I walked around with an M16 and made sure nobody messed with our aircraft. So, with that being said, there was definitely something going on. They were tracking these objects all over the East Coast. Pilots were killed chasing these things. That was swept under the rug. It was never talked about. It was an accident, you know. And some have no explanations as why Johnny Pilot crashed and burned, you know, when they were chasing these objects. The whole Flatwoods incident was seen by numerous people, and it wasn't just one object, it was several. It was, I believe, six or seven in total. Yeah, some say seven, some say six. I've interviewed some of the witnesses and some of the people that were around that are left living. Most of them are in their 90s now. There's only two that saw the original craft that landed on the Fisher Farm, left Fred and Eddie May. They still to this day will tell you they don't know what they saw. All they know, it was a metallic creature. They don't know if there was something inside this suit that chased them and scared the living hell out of them all, you know, but they saw, you know, it was real, whatever it was. Now, the interesting part of that whole story is the other side of the story. The other side of the story, the National Guard was called in that night, but it wasn't just the normal National Guard unit. It was the Special Forces National Guard unit of West Virginia. He got a call, the commander got a call from D.C. and said, get over to the Fisher Farm now and collect any evidence you can find and send it back to us post-haste. The unit was separated into two units because there was a report of a downed airplane. That's what the locals were saying they saw, because they saw a fiery object coming down. But the thing was, the thing didn't come straight down like a crash and burn. It maneuvered, and it landed on the Fisher Farm. But there was also the report of the other one on the Elk River, approximately 2 miles away. So what happened was the Special Guard unit commander separated his unit into two units. His men and him came in covertly on the backside through an old logging trail on the Fisher Farm, undiscovered by the public. Nobody knew they were even in there. The other unit was down on the Elk River going through the motions of investigating a downed aircraft. Nothing was ever found. So the commander comes in with his men, approximately 50 to 60 men, and he finds some impressions in the ground and an oily substance. He collects samples, they take pictures, send it back to DC, never hear anything back. He was interviewed sometime later by an author named Fraschino, who wrote, did a lot of research on this for many years, wrote the books, you know, he's got a book out, a couple of books on it, revised edition. And the guy spent 20 years researching this stuff. And anyway, he was in an interview, this commander of this guard unit, way back after he retired. He was like 80 years old. He's dead now. In his opinion, he stated that it was definitely a cover-up of some sort. He just didn't know, and they never let him know anything. So when you have a commander, this guy served in Vietnam, Korea, and then in the Guard as the commander of the West Virginia National or Special Forces Unit. The guy had been around. You know, he knew his stuff. So when you have that kind of scenario going on and you got those kind of people, they have something to lose, even though he's retired and he's an old man. You know, his whole reputation, his whole military career is in jeopardy by even saying that, you know. So you got to take those into account. Next question. Any more questions? Did I answer your question good enough? Okay. Anybody else? Any questions on Bigfoot? Ghosts? Anything? So you can check my stuff out. www.davespinksparanormalinvestigator.com. You got links to all my stuff. We've got I work with a group of guys. We call ourselves Society of the Supernatural. I don't know if you've ever heard of David Weatherly, the author of the Black Eyed Kids books, Strange Intruders. Me and him are partners. We travel the country investigating and researching this stuff. We also have recently added Rosemary Ellen Guiley to our group, Eric Altman, who's a PA cryptid guy, Bigfoot guy, UFO guy, been around a long time. Ross Allison out of Seattle, who owns a Spooked in Seattle Museum, who's also a college lecturer in the paranormal circuit, is in our group. Sean Austin on Demon Files is in our group. He's our rookie investigator. He's been investigating for about 6-7 years. He handles like the more spiritual stuff from his aspect. So, you know, we got a good group of guys with a lot of time in the field. We all have our own independent things that we do, but when we come together, we call ourselves Society of the Supernatural. So you can see most of us have all been on TV, whoop-de-doo. That's not why we do this, but we like to share what we know and what we've experienced in any way we can, such as these events and whatnot. So we also started filming our own DVDs, you know, the right way, and not the TV way. You know, what you see is what you get. It's the real thing. There's no dramatic intros, nothing like that. We give the history of the place and maybe a little bit of spooky music in the beginning, and then it's right into our investigation. So, and what we know as far as the informational, factual information on some of these places. Got a really good Point Pleasant Files DVD out. We're doing a 3-volume series on that. The number 2 and 3 will be out later this year. So if you're into Mothman and Point Pleasant, let me tell you, we got some crazy stuff in that DVD. It's never been released like on any public venue, only on our DVDs, the only place you can see it, and it's pretty phenomenal. So blew me away. I mean, it blew me away, the stuff that we came across out there. So any more questions? I'd be happy to take questions. I love talking about this stuff. None? Well, come by my table over by the yellow railroad car. Come by and see me. Come and talk. I'd like to talk anything paranormal. Thank you, guys.
That was the Terror in the Woods panel. I hope all of you enjoyed it. And I forgot to tell all of you something at the start of the show. In the disclaimer section is that where this panel was located at, it was not in a small room. Again, not in a small room. It was in a building the size of a football field in more ways than one. And there was a serious sound drop-off past a certain feet. Meaning, if you didn't use the PA mic or on the podium where the mic I'm using right now to record was at, you couldn't hear anything on either mic. And that being said, I pretty much lost a panel episode. I thought there was going to be a total of 5 panels today. I was wrong. There was 4 panels. Because the first panel of the day, both presenters, or at least one presenter that was up there, never touched the mic, the PA system mic. There was a PA system microphone up there, or say a microphone hooked up to a PA system. And the volume on that was set high enough, as if you listen to our, let's see, who is the presenter? The Frank Bennett episode, the cryptozoology episode, you could kind of hear, he primarily uses the PA microphone, and you're able to hear it, what he's talking about, and or at least presenting. These presenters didn't touch any mic, and for me to boost it was very hard to do. You could still not make anything out, and therefore, I had to toss what would have been 4 panels to give all of you was cut down to 3 because they did not use any microphone. And as I stated again earlier in the show, we will be doing a podcast 101 panel at the Four State Comic-Con, and I will probably have a rant at that panel about the importance of using a microphone. So, this has been a show pet peeve for me, the microphone and a mic setup. But let me continue that to say that if you enjoyed this episode, we do provide panel episodes for education type of ordeals or for edutainment or purposes, so you could learn something. And I love presenting all of you with panel episodes because you get to hear something at an event that you didn't get a chance to go to. So, that being said, our social media is that we're on Facebook. You can leave us a message there. That way, if you so choose, it is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. We do have an email. If you wish to leave us a question, a comment, or smart remark, you may do so by emailing us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. We do have a Twitter account. It is longcoatmafia. You can leave us a DM that way if you so choose. We do have an Instagram account. It is also longcoatmafia. So you can please like or follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and like our page on Facebook. It helps us grow and makes us stand out a little bit more. And we do have a YouTube channel. Just search up Long Coat Mafia Podcast on the YouTube search engine. We will come up. And I might add the fact that we tend to put out some videos that are strictly YouTube exclusives. And some videos are also Facebook exclusive videos. It's due to various reasons on both platforms. So please like and subscribe to both social media outlets. That way you can always catch what's going on, where we've been, and everything else. So there's that. Also, if you're listening to us on a mobile device, you could also, let me just say this, let me rephrase that. If you're listening to us on a mobile device, such as an iPhone, iPad, or I should say a iOS device, and it goes wonky, or an Android device, and Google Play Music goes wonky, you do have other alternatives, such as Spotify. You have the Stitcher app, Stitcher Radio app, and the Podbean app itself, which is, I do recommend, because it goes all the way, it provides you with all our shows going all the way back to the beginning, and it will allow you to listen to the four other panels we've done at Four State Comic-Con events in the past. But if listening to us on a mobile device is not your thing for whatever reason, we are available on your desktop or laptop computer. You can listen to us through, again, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, again, Podbean. Our website, our Podbean website is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. We are available on iTunes. So I personally recommend going, if iTunes is very finicky and it tends to do so, please use the Podbean account or the Podbean site and download our episodes that way, or you could stream the episodes that way. And that seems to be about it. I'm usually forgetting something. But again, let me remind all of you about our GoFundMe. Please donate if you get a chance and have the funds to do so. Any amount does help. It is, again, GoFundMe.com/HelpTheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. So please do so. Please help the show. Donate when you can. Questions, comments, and everything else can be sent to longcoatmafia@gmail.com or leave us a message on our Facebook page, which is, again, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. We are working on a Facebook group as well, so please stay tuned. So that being said, I am out. Take care, and hopefully we'll speak to you again next week.
See you next time on the Long Coat Mafia Podcast.